topic. I'm going to look at what's called an ontological model. And also, following out from that, there's a classification scheme for different types of interpretation. So, the key paper here is one by Harrigan and Speckens. From several years ago. And there's a classification scheme and all this is in terms of something that's called an ontological model. So the word ontological comes from the philosophy community, and it has to do with what's real. So the sort of ontological aspects of a situation are the things that are really there. So here's the idea. Imagine we have some preparation. And then coming out of that is a system, and then afterwards we might make some measurement. And the measurement can have different results that we'll label by k. And we'll assume that the real situation, the real state of affairs here, is described by some variables, lambda. So these describe what's really happening. Lambda is called the ontic state. If you look sometimes in the literature, lambda are called the hidden variables. But ontic state is a better name because when you look at the models, it's not the case that actually all of the parameters in lambda are necessarily hidden. They may correspond to things we actually see. So the key point is that it describes what's actually real. So here's the idea. We have some preparation procedure. And then after that, we have some measurement procedure. We get an outcome passing between the preparation device and the measurement device is some physical system that is described in each instance by some ontic state. Now, oh yeah, and we'll say that this belongs to some state space. So it's the space of ontic state. Yes.
We assume the sum to be a complete description.
Yes. Okay. So this is the ontological state space. So now, in a laboratory, you set up some box and you press the button, the system comes out. You don't necessarily know what lambda you prepared, and you can expect that there'll be a probability distribution over different lambdas, so that every time you do this, you may get a different lambda and the sum distribution. So we say, so given a preparation, this is the distribution function, and this is the distribution corresponding to a particular preparation. If we had a different preparation, then we would have most likely a different distribution. So now, when we perform a measurement, we want to know, we're interested in the probability that we get a certain outcome. So given that we perform, it's given that we have a preparation P and a certain measurement M, we're going to get that by integrating over this distribution in an appropriate way with respect to lambda. And we also need to introduce something corresponding to the measurement device. So this is the distribution over lambda given, oh, sorry, that should be a P, given the preparation. And then the measurement box, given a certain lambda, it has a certain probability for a certain outcome. So this is that there. Is that clear? So if we're interested in constructing an ontological model for quantum theory, then we want to be able to get the probabilities that are calculated from quantum theory according to a formula just like that. So that means that the trace of the operator associated with that measurement and that outcome. So I think you did with Joemison, you saw that measurement outcomes have positive operators associated with them. And then the density matrix. So this has to be equal to the formula we have there. So now we've got this basic ontological model in place. And I should say you can elaborate it a bit to include a transformation as well, include sort of, you could also have inside here, you have three boxes, one which is a preparation, one which is a transformation, and then one which is a measurement. And then you can elaborate it to take that into account. But once we've got this model in place, now we can give a few definitions corresponding to different sorts of ontological models for quantum theory. So first one is psi-complete. The idea here is that there are some interpretations where the wave function is a complete description of reality. So the hidden variables would really just correspond to the wave function. So then there's a one-to-one map between The wave function, I'm taking the projector because we're not interested in the phase information. That's not physical. It should be a one-to-one map between the projector associated with the state and the hidden variables. So for each state, there's a hidden variable, and vice versa. And that the distribution over lambda associated with a preparation for a given state, psi, is given by a delta function centered on this particular corresponding hidden variable. So if I draw that like this, then each quantum state has its own delta function. Any questions? Okay. I just go wait. Well, I can't hear you until then. Yes.
Your psi complete picture means psi contain complete information. But does that mean that psi, the wave function, is really a physical thing?
Yeah, that would be saying that it's physical, and it's the only thing that's physical for that system. Yeah, that's what the definition means. Yeah. Then you can also talk about psi incomplete. Incomplete. And that's just this means not psi complete. The next definition is psi ontic. And this has been the subject of a lot of study in recent years. So here the idea is that the wave function is physical. The wave function is real. Maybe there's extra things that are real as well, but at least the wave function is real. So an ontological model is psi ontic if for any pair of the preparations corresponding to different pure states, the associated distributions are non-overlapping. So that means that if you multiply them together, we get zero. For all lambda. Or diagrammatically, it means you can see that there, you can see they have this separate support. If you think about it, this condition means that you can, if you look, if you know lambda, you can work out what psi is. So this has to be true. Sorry, I should say, yeah, this has to be true for any pair of pure preparations. That means that every pure preparation has its own distinct support. So if you know lambda, then you can look along here and see which state it corresponds to. That means that the information about the state must be written into lambda, although there may be extra information corresponding to the different lambdas in this case, corresponding to the same psi.
Here, the reason why the given preparation does not give a specific lambda, but the probability distribution is fundamental, or the incomplete.
Well, then, to look at this, you need to look at different examples of interpretations and ask that question in the context of any given interpretation. But I mean, ultimately, if you believe quantum theory is true, then it would have to be fundamental. You simply can't see the different ones. So there's no more precise preparation that would give you a better, there's no way you can prepare a more precise in such a model, where there's some width. Quantum theory doesn't allow you to prepare, just a particular lambda or a narrower distribution of a lambda.
My question is if the lambda contain more information than the wave function, but isn't that still possible that we can prepare the system? Give a lambda, but just some part of the information is not accessible. So it has a sharp
thing. Yeah, so maybe when we come to the de Broglie-Bohm model, which is an example of this kind, then you'll see, you can ask that kind of question again, and you'll see how it looks there. One thing I maybe should have emphasized, maybe it's obvious, but so lambda really just stands for a whole bunch of variables, not just a single. It's not just one dimension. I'm just representing it schematically in this graph. So lambda could be a whole bunch of different parameters. Lambda can really be anything, any mathematical quantities you want. So then there's another definition, psi. Psi epistemic, and that just means not psi ontic. So in that case, there exists at least one pair of quantum states, psi and phi, where the distributions overlap. And that means that you can't tell if you know what the hidden variable is. If the hidden variable is in the region where the two distributions overlap, then you don't know whether the preparation was psi was psi or phi. In some sense, this will be very natural. It will be nice, or at least the usually when you look at, when you have probability distributions, this is the sort of thing you might expect. And so the fact that it's quite difficult to find an interpretation of quantum theory that does this is interesting. Have one more definition. Psi supplemented. So this is where the ontic state is given by psi and some other parameters. So, and you can draw a picture for this. And so now a particular state psi will be a delta function in the in one of the two axes here. But we'll have some distribution over in the other direction. So there could be some distribution. Hope that picture is roughly clear. So in this axis, it's a delta function. And then in the other axis, there's some distribution. And you can write that the distribution associated with a particular state is the product of the distribution along the omega direction and the delta function for the psi direction. Okay.
Excuse me,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are we still assuming here that there's a one-to-one correspondence between preparation procedures and wave functions?
Yeah, well, sorry. So there's sort of definitionally a one-to-one correspondence in the case of quantum theory between preparations and preparations of pure states, if you like. You can consider mixed states, which is a broader class of preparations.
Yeah. But pure states being described by wave.
Yeah, that's right. So the preparation is described by, the preparation for a pure state is described by a wave function, or at least the projection associated with a wave function. But then the ontic state is something that goes beyond that. In principle,
does
it could.
Does that mean that every psi ontic model is psi supplemented?
No. So here's an example of a psi ontic model, which is not psi supplemented, at least in principle.
That is psi epistemic.
Yeah. So psi epistemic models, if you can find them, would not be psi supplemented.
But they are not psi ontic.
And they're not psi. Oh, sorry. You said every psi ontic model is. Sorry. Yes. it depends what you mean. If you think that psi supplement, if you think that psi complete models are examples of psi supplemented models, then sure, then you just have no extra axis. But yeah, every psi ontic model would take this form. No. What am I talking about? Yeah, I think you can say that. You can say every scientific. In fact, well, I'm going to give you the space. I'll give the next picture is I think answers that question here. So So you can say that's true, and then there's a whole bunch of things that, well, here's the sort of space of ontological models, if you like. So psiontic. So, so you have here you have psiontic models, which include psi-complete models and psi-incomplete models, and the ones in this box would be the psi-supplemented. So where you actually have some additional variables, because here you don't need any additional variables. The wave function is already sufficient. So these ones, psi is not sufficient. And over here, psi is also not sufficient. To tell you what's going on, because you can have some overlap, and so psi doesn't tell you what lambda is. Okay. Are there any more questions on this?
Am I thinking correctly? Like to consider the spin singlet, like mm-hmm. superposition of spin up down
yeah.
minus down up. And in case of the side complete picture, it would be just one delta pit. Lambda and P
right.
figure in the superposition yep. state, but in case of psi-amplitude picture, like there would be a two P with spin up and spin down. Did it correct understand?
No, that doesn't sound correct. If I have, why are you interested? Why are you interested in the singlet? You want to have two systems?
Not necessarily singlet, but superposition of the state.
So you could have. So you're interested, so imagine you have just a superposition of two states, zero,
yeah, zero.
Plus one, okay, with some amplitudes, whatever. Okay. So that's a state, psi. And now in a psi-ontic model, there'd be some distribution over the underlying hidden variables corresponding to this preparation associated with this, okay. I think you're thinking about whether there is some. This is somehow composed of distributions corresponding to 0 and 1. Is that right? So no, that wouldn't necessarily be the case. But I think in some ways that would be the most obvious motivation. If you could make it so that this corresponded to a modulus alpha squared distribution corresponding to 0 and a modulus beta squared distribution corresponding to 1, then there wouldn't be any problems in quantum theory. It would just be a classical ignorance theory. That's not the case. So we have to be more subtle than that. And we know that's not the case because of interference. Okay. No more questions.
Are you going to cover like more detailed example of this one?
So what I'm going to do after this is I'll go through some of the so the Debreu-Bohm well the Debreu-Bohm model is an example that fits into this box. The many worlds interpretation kind of fits into this box. There are some messy models that fit into this box. There's no beautiful model that fits in here. So I won't cover that. I'll just maybe. The reference. Right. So I need lots of blackboard space for the next next. Okay, so I'm going to go into more detail. So I'm going to give you a flow chart for the how to think about the different interpretations that are available. So there's going to be a bunch of yes, no, and maybe type questions. So one question you might ask is there real stuff out there? Is there any reality at all? And if the answer is no, then I'm kind of flummoxed as to what you should do. If the answer is yes, well, one can start thinking about one can ask further questions. So you can ask whether psi is real or not. And then, and here I'm thinking, well, this is yes, in some way I understand. Basically, the psiontic model approach. So the ontological models approach. But there's another possibility that the ontological models approach isn't really correct. And so there's some third set of possibilities. So reality, but not as I know it. Understand it, I should say. And then there's things like the Copenhagen interpretation. There's a very interesting approach due to Chris Fuchs and his colleagues, which goes by the name of cubism. And there's probably more stuff out there as well. Okay. So let me just take these two arrows down. Okay. This to go. So is the wave function real? We have no or yes. So if the wave function is not real, then we're into the category of psi epistemic models. And so far, there's no really compelling psi epistemic model out there. On the other hand, I think it's a really exciting area, possible avenue for research. If you could find a model that was psi epistemic, then you might explain, you might get a better insight into what probability is doing in quantum theory. And then, so the other option, the other possibility is the wave function is real. So that means we're in the context of psiontic models. And now we can ask whether it's psi complete or not. If the answer is no, that means it's psi supplemented. And the most famous model out there is the de Broglie-Bohm model. Which is the thing we'll be looking at next. And if the answer is yes, then there's two further questions you could ask. Is there actual physical collapse or not? If there's no physical collapse, then you end up in the many worlds approach. And if there is physical collapse, then you end up in the into these collapse models. So there's a bunch of possibilities out there, the sort of Copenhagen cubism strand. I recommend you look at, if you're interested in the Copenhagen approach, then one place to look would be Niels Bohr's response to the EPR paper. There's the cubism papers of Chris Fuchs, and you'll find a lot of stuff on the internet there. So epistemic models, there isn't really much out there yet. I said I'd give you the citation for that. I don't have it written down. There's some proof that you can have such models, but they're highly contrived at this stage. So there exist some highly contrived models, but there's no natural model. But what I will do is I'll go through the de Broglie-Bohm model, the many worlds approach, and the collapse models. Yeah.
What would be a necessary criterion for the reality of the wave function? Because in EPR we only had a sufficient.
So in the EPR condition, we had a sufficient condition for the existence of an element of physical reality, which is different. So you want to know what's a necessary condition for the
psi being real.
The necessary condition is this, that every pair of distinct pure states have the distributions over ontic states are non-overlapping. And if you can prove that, then you can prove that then you've proved that the wave function is real. So there is there's the famous by now famous PBR argument, which shows with a very modest assumption that this has to be true in quantum theory. That any pair of quantum states have to be non-overlapping. And the main author, Matt Pusey, is a postdoc here. And I'm hoping he'll give you a lecture on this in the third week. Look forward to that. But there is an assumption in that theorem. And that assumption may be false. And if you don't make that assumption, then it's possible to have this kind of contrived epistemic models.
convergence against computation? Like, it is neither like science before science.
So, I mean, the honest truth is I don't really understand the Copenhagen interpretation. And I think, you know, every time I attempt to understand it, I come away with a different picture of what it's saying. And the certain key things in the Copenhagen interpretation that people say, so that you've got to describe your experiment in classical terms, which point to a sort of an operational approach. But it's never completely clear to me what the Copenhagen interpretation is saying about the underlying reality, what it's saying about these ontological questions. And every time I look, and also I think there are different interpretations of the Copenhagen interpretation. It's not clear that people even agree what it's saying. I find it difficult to really say anything coherent there. The cubism approach, I think, is more worked out. It's sort of a more consistent approach. But it's also, I think, even according to its authors, it's an approach which is sort of in the making. It's not a completed program. So the hope is that by finding all the aspects of quantum theory which correspond just to sort of knowledge, just to thinking in terms so a key idea there is that the wave function is a state of knowledge. It corresponds to basically something in the brain of the observer, not necessarily something in the world. And their hope is that by finding all those aspects of quantum theory which correspond to knowledge, the thing that's left over, the sort of substrate that's left over afterwards, will be the real stuff. That will be the real stuff. But it's not, according to my understanding, it isn't a completed program, and they're still working on that. But again, I don't really understand it, so I don't feel competent to teach it. These three models, on the other hand, this one in particular is very well worked out, so it's easy to explain what's going on. The many worlds model is, it's a very simple idea that the wave function is everything, and therefore we have to think of the world splitting into each case. But when you actually want to understand the detail, then there are all sorts of problems, and I'll talk about those problems. The best worked out approach to the many worlds interpretation is due to the philosophers in Oxford. And so there's a bunch of them, Simon Saunders, David Wallace, also David Deutsch is a physicist, but has kind of inspired them. And so I'll talk about the approach due to David Wallace in particular. And then the collapse models, again, this is quite well worked out. You can actually write down equations. And there are various approaches there. I'll talk about the original work on the collapse model was done by Philip Pearl. He's the same person who coined the expression, the reality problem. The particular model I'll talk about is due to Gherardi, Rimini, and Weber. And that's also John Bell has a nice paper on the GLW collapse model. It's in his book, Speakables and Unspeakables. Incidentally, if you haven't seen that book, it's a nice little collection of John Bell's papers. There's some copies in the library here. Okay. Any more questions there? No. So when we look at these different interpretations, here are some questions we should some questions we should watch out for, some issues we should look out for.
So.
So for any given interpretation. First question is, how does the interpretation solve the measurement or the reality problem? It kind of has to solve the measurement problem, or at least address it. Second question is the interpretation non-local, as Bell's theorem suggests, and how is it non-local? And the third question that what interests me in particular is the interpretation a good departure point to make progress in physics? So in particular, is it a good departure point for trying to solve the problem of quantum gravity? It doesn't have to be quantum gravity. There are other areas of physics involving quantum theory where progress is expected or should be expected. So in a course like this, it's probably good to have full disclosure. So I should disclose what my attitude is towards the interpretation of quantum theory. So my current attitude is that I don't really like any of the interpretations that are out there, and that we should think of quantum theory as an effective approximation to a deeper theory of quantum gravity. And there's a danger then that finding the sort of best interpretation of quantum theory, which according to this point of view is only an effective theory, it is really no more than an academic exercise. So an interesting parallel would be, imagine you were trying to, before general relativity, you were trying to find the best interpretation of Newtonian gravity. You know, there are various interpretational issues such as the fact that you have this non-locality, if you move a mass here, then instantaneously it affects particles elsewhere. So there's a serious issue there, and people might have tried to interpret it and even come up with the best interpretation. But you don't really understand that problem until you get a theory of general relativity. And then there's a local explanation for what's happening in terms of the sort of metric field and so on, curvature of space-time. Now, retrospectively, you could still ask the academic question, what's the best interpretation of Newtonian gravity? And the best answer might be that, take general relativity, let C tend to infinity, and then you get what's called the Newton-Cartan theory of gravity. And you can see that gravity then is due to curvature in space, not in space-time, but in space. And it's an instantaneous effect, but it gives you a sort of an interpretation of gravity. So interesting, but really just academic. It's only when progress was made in physics that a better answer to that whole question came up. And my feeling is that the situation may be similar in interpreting quantum theory. But that's my attitude. A lot of people don't agree with me, in particular the people who are pushing on these different approaches. Certainly, I think if you are pushing on these different approaches, then it's important to ask the last question, which is, how is that useful to make progress in physics? Okay. So the next... any more questions there before I carry on? Because
what precisely would non-local mean in this ontological model framework?
That's a good question. I don't know that there's a... So I can tell you what non-local means in this interpretation and this one. It's interesting, actually, in the Manuel's interpretation, the claim is that it's not non-local. But the Manuel's interpretation has a funny property that if I see something here, there's something called counterfactual definiteness. So the idea there is that I'm not directly answering your question, incidentally. I'm sort of going around it. So counterfactual definiteness is one of these implicit assumptions in deriving Bell's theorem. You assume that if you were to make a measurement, you'd have a definite outcome. And that seems obvious. But if you look at the Manuel's interpretation, it isn't true, because in Manuel's interpretation, if you make a measurement, you'll have all outcomes. You just live in the world of one. So that's an implicit assumption in the background of deriving Bell's theorem, improving Bell's theorem. And it's not true in Manuel's. So people in the Manuel's community claim that this is actually a local model. It's also not entirely clear it fits into the ontological model's framework, because the ontological model's framework has a sort of operational flavor to it. You've got these boxes. You say you have a preparation, which corresponds to a box, and then you have a measurement, which is another box. And you're not really describing those boxes in a sort of fundamental way, but in a sort of operational way. So there's an issue there. But your actual question, which is how to give a definition of non-locality in the ontological model's framework, is a good one. Well, one problem is it doesn't, as I've stated, it have spatial structure. So you'd need to put that in first before you could attempt to give a definition. But I don't know anyone's tried to do that in the literature. I have to ask Rob Speckens, maybe he has an answer. In the case of the Dvorak-Bohm model, we can see that it's explicitly non-local. There's a certain... Yeah, well, I'll go into that next week. But there's an expression for the velocity of a particle, and that expression depends non-locally on the positions of all the other particles at space-like separated distances. And also, these collapse models are non-local. It's like what I was talking about yesterday. If you make a measurement, the wave function collapses non-locally, so you go from having some wave function to a certain place to having no wave function there. So these things are very non-local. Any more questions? Okay, so I don't have time to start the next topic. The next topic on Monday is going to be the de Broglie-Bohm model. That's a model where you have a system consisting of some number of particles. Then you have the wave function, and that's a real thing. But then you also supplement the wave function with some additional degrees of freedom which describe the actual positions of the particles. And then you have an equation for the evolution of the wave function. That's just the Schrodinger equation. And you have another equation that tells you how the particles move. That's a guidance equation. So that's an equation for the velocity of these particles. So I'll show you how that works. And maybe we can even look at a few examples. It's interesting to see. One of the great things about the de Broglie-Bohm model is you can really see explicitly how it explains quantum theory in terms of these particles moving around. Okay, I'll stop there.